So can you please introduce yourself?
My name is Jean Chapman. I'm a research associate at the Simone de Beauvoir Institute, which is a college attached to Concordia University.
You gave a presentation recently about violence against women in India, and you described India as a Brahmanical patriarchy. Can you please tell us what Brahmanical patriarchy is?
Certainly, I make the link between violence against women in contemporary India and Brahmanical patriarchy, which is, I should imagine, responsible in a way for the social structure that we have in India. Brahmanical patriarchy is a very old system of social organization, and the ordering of Indian society developed in a stricter caste system in later Vedic times, which is the 2nd century BC, due to the influence of the priestly and ruling groups who desired to secure their dominant position in society. Caste is about social status and the organization of that status to enable the exploitation, domination, stigmatization of castes which are ascribed low status.
You have mentioned about priests, so I believe that religion is important in India. How important is it, and do you think that religion is enforcing the oppression of women in any way?
Brahmanical patriarchy has its roots both in secular and religious tradition, and it's very difficult to separate the two. What is distinctive about patriarchy in India is it is a product of endogamy and manifests itself as discrete social groups which do not permit intermarriage. And endogamy is so peculiar to caste that it spawned or sustained a range of mechanisms in the development of caste. When I say that it's an enclosed class of Brahmins, you're already talking about the secular and the religious nature of patriarchy in India. And the Brahmins were the first class to raise the wall of endogamy around themselves, which serves the dual function of keeping some in and locking others out. So you've got a hierarchical system, and then you keep a tight grip and make rules which are secular, mm-hmm. which are religious, which owe something to Hindu mythology and to prejudice against women, which is called misogyny.
Caste system, it's a crucial part of when one is to describe Indian society. I was wondering where women belongs in the system. What is their role and how are they being treated?
It's a position of subjugation, and it always has been. Women are vital for the caste system to work. The expectation is everyone will marry, men and women, but certainly women. But caste purity is maintained by women. So that is the ordering of your society, and you have to keep the castes pure, and that depends on women. So their sexuality is controlled. It is controlled by the males, the head of the household, and also the males of the household. The fathers monitor the sexuality of the daughters, the husbands over the wives, the brothers over the sisters, and the kinfolk generally make sure that the caste system works, and women are vital to maintaining the caste system. Their position is one of subjugation, one of obedience, one of where motherhood is extremely valorized and very important.
Are Indian women fine with their place in society? Is there no organization that is fighting against such system?
I don't know how to answer that question. I cannot say they're happy or unhappy with it. I think that when there is discrimination, when there is subjugation, it is easier to accept it than to fight it. When everything is linked to everything else, what is uppermost in your mind is not that I'm an oppressed person, I'm an oppressed woman. No, you go about your business of being a wife and being a teacher or having an occupation and going out to work. And uppermost in your mind is not that I'm a suppressed or a kept down human being. That's not uppermost on your mind. That is what tradition is. That is what culture has taught us, that you fit somewhere. And if it's a position of inequality, that is what the caste system is. But you women have to know and have bought into it for the simple reason that the underpinning of this acceptance is something called pativratna, or wifely duties, which are tied to a prescriptive textual model which remains sacred. Pativratna is the total devotion of her wife to her husband, her lord. A woman's career is her husband. Girls, then adolescents, then wives, are schooled in this way of thinking, which is internalized by women who attempt to live up to the idealized notion of a wife. This in turn becomes the ideology which women accept and aspire to. So chastity and fidelity become the highest expression of selfhood and salvation and the release from the cycle of birth and rebirth and to be one with the universe. So it's a very attractive ideology that is working at the same time. So you can understand why people won't feel repressed or discriminated against, because you have your own way of getting there, which is to be a dedicated wife. And that is your first duty. And this is what Brahmanical patriarchy has done to con women into thinking that this is the only way there is.
What would the society or the husband or family do to women who say no, sexuality is mine, and decides to marry a partner of her choice? And if there are such women, how many are there?
The upper castes have always made their own choices, whether it's Indian men marrying out of caste or out of country, whether it is upper caste women and upper class women, they have pretty much done their own thing anyway. But we do have something now called choice marriage, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. We have internal way of policing, they're called Kaap Panchayats, and they are policing that people are marrying within a certain definition of who they can marry. And this is very strictly laid down, and everyone knows the rules to that. And if you marry outside of that, it could be pretty dodgy for you. It is tradition. It is. It tells you exactly who you can marry and what relationship it is to the ancestor. You have a common ancestor, but it can't be too close. Mm. But it is all by tradition, and people follow this.
I was wondering about girls especially. Do they have access to same education as boys?
In some middle-class families, yes. You have educated parents, grandparents now. Education has been available. But I think that gives you depiction of urban life in India, where you have schools, you have universities, which can compete at world level. But when you're talking about the more depressed areas or slums, which are abundant and attached to cities, services are not very good for anything, including education. Certain areas have better educated women and girls than others. But the fact remains that the level of literacy is quite low for a population as a whole. And you have on every front the stark difference where there's money and where there's no money. And one of the things that is very, as in China, very much aspired to is an education. And the facilities are there. There are all kinds of educational institutions. A lot of it is private, but some of it is also from the government of India. It's state-sponsored, state-funded. And yes, then it depends on the parents as to whether they let their daughters go to school or not.
Okay, so daughters are treated differently than sons?
Yes, very much so. An example would be a girl might be taken out of school when she reaches puberty to look after the household. But there's another interpretation that can be put on that is she has to be protected so that she remains a virgin until she's married. Because of the dowry system, that is what you are giving to your husband, a virgin bride. And you're prepared to pay for that because then she goes into the home of her husband's family and she doesn't have any rights over her parental family's wealth or estate or anything. Emotional ties are still there. But in the case of boys, they are the ones who are desired. Women pray at a very early stage of their marriage that they won't be barren and that they won't produce daughters. It is a very male-centric culture that somebody, a man who has sons, is very well off, whereas one who has daughters is not. They're killed one way or the other. Children are killed. We have a huge problem with the gender gap, where you have 840 women for 1,000 men, which is a huge deficit in the population. And this is going to be a social time bomb that India is going to wake up to one of these days, because there are lots of men, but where are the girls?
Why did you say that men who have sons become rich and men who have daughters don't? Is that because sons get to have jobs and daughters, they don't?
It's nothing to do with jobs. It's nothing to do with the amount of income. It's a traditional. It is because we have embraced the system of dowry, which is the exchange of women from one family to another family. And you give a dowry, which means gifts, to, it used to be to the woman, but now it's to that family. And that can impoverish you. You take loans out for it because you want to be seen as coming from a good family. And you go in debt for it. And you could be in. And what if you've got more than one daughter? Whereas men are always at the receiving end. They'll get the gifts. So why? Because you believe it's your sacred duty to give your daughter in marriage. And you do it with the best of intentions. And it used to be that that was her security in life. But that changed. And when it changed, how it changed, why it's evolving to the point where young women are being killed because they don't give enough dowry. Young women are being abandoned because they are perceived not to have given enough dowry. And then the groom and his family, his mother, his, everybody, they'll go out and negotiate another dowry with another woman. So the cycle is just repeating itself. So you've got these young, abandoned women, which is problematic. You have dowry deaths, which are difficult to identify as dowry deaths. The first choice is to burn women to death. The second is to tip them into a well. The third is to throw them off a roof. The fourth is to give them insecticide. And if they survive all that, they still won't talk about it for fear of reprisal. So they are in a very unhappy relationship out of it, and they just can't get out of it.
You have said the middle class are not going through similar experiences that you described, such as having freedom of marriage, having freedom over their sexuality, do the middle-class women also, are they undergoing similar violence as the other women?
I wouldn't like to say what you just said, that it's, you cannot deal with India and only talk about class and talk about middle class, because you've got the caste system, and sometimes they coincide and sometimes they don't. There's a variety of ways in which women, violence against women is perpetrated. And it's not easy to say that the upper castes face violence in one way and non-upper caste women face it in another way. There is one universal, and that is low caste women are ill-treated. There's no two ways about it. Yes, that is a difference. But I hesitate to use the word class, as you asked, and is it a matter of upper caste and lower class? I don't know how to make that assessment, because it is the caste system, and the same thing that applies for one could easily apply to another. The fact that we haven't really done too many studies of what women feel about their lot in life, whether women are speaking about unhappy marriages and violence against them, perpetrated against them, that hasn't hit the stands yet. We're not doing research on that, because we're not looking at violence against women. We're not holding that central. We tend or would like to look at it in terms of gender justice. We'd like to look at it in terms of violation of human rights. But I'm saying I want to look at violence against women. Where is it coming from? What can we understand from it in order to stop it? Who are our allies in order to stop it? Because violence against women is a problem.
I just want to ask one more question about dowry. The law was prohibited sometime in 60, I read. Would you say that even though it was prohibited, the marriage are still taking place only entirely out of dowry?
It's a common practice. Where it was once an upper caste tradition, everyone is giving dowry now, whether it's Hindus, whether it is the Christians, whether it is the Muslims, whether it is tribal groups. Everyone has gone to the dowry mode of gift-giving. And there's good reason for that. Under Rajiv Gandhi's government, 84 to 89, there was a move to relax the restrictions on luxury goods such as cars, televisions, refrigerators. There was a twofold impact. The consolidated Indian middle class, which demonstrated patterns of conspicuous consumption. And secondly, there was an increase in dowry demands, with the accompanying practice of harassing young females for even more consumer goods. So that is when dowry, suddenly you got a very prosperous group of people, and they want to flaunt their wealth or show their wealth or demonstrate their wealth, and it was done through marriage.
How common is it for Indian women to undergo violence, and what are some of the reasons? You mentioned dowry as one. What are some others?
Dowry is associated with violence against brides. And as I said, the acceptability of dowry has moved beyond upper caste traditional Hindu practice. And it used to be dowry was a voluntary act given to secure a daughter's future. And what she took to her husband's home was hers for life. But as I said, that changed. Now, dowry gifts do not begin and end with a wedding. In spite of negotiations before marriage, the groom or his parents may one day demand even more money and begin to abuse or torture or sometimes return the now shamed bride to her parents for what they decide was not a large enough dowry. Alternatively, every occasion followed the wedding, pregnancy, childbirth, especially the birth of a male child, festivals, death of a father, is accompanied by a flow of gifts to the husband's family. But I will say that globally, Certainly within the academy, violence against women is framed within discourses of gender justice, human rights, health and well-being, partner violence, intimate partner violence, battered women, gender violence, sexual assault. There are all sorts of institutions, international institutions, universities, which are dealing with violence against women. To try and pin anything down to say that violence against women in India is any different, I hesitate to say that. I think violence is violence, and against women is against women. There's obviously going to be a sexual component to it. So I wouldn't like to say precisely who is being violated, how. What we can say is that the violence against women can be mental and it can be physical. Mental abuse takes the form of withholding children, food, water, medication from a mother, shunning, belittling, isolating, degrading her. That's world over. It's not just in India. Physical violence takes the form of wife battering, female genital mutilation, honor killing. 88.9% is perpetrated by family members, according to the Indian Commission for Women. Forced marriage, child abuse, child sex abuse, kicking and beating women and children with rifle butts, sticks, stones, hands, fists, elbows, shoulders. Female feticide and infanticide. When newborns are smothered, poisoned, drowned, force-fed grain husks to choke them to death. Buried alive or abandoned to the elements. Other crimes against women include sexual harassment, enforced sterilization, pregnancy, prostitution, pornography. In 1999, a survey on incest was conducted with 348 upper and middle class urban women. Nearly half admitted to being molested. A third were aged 10 and younger when they experienced serious sexual abuse, including rape, at the hands of a family member and family friends. Following the Delhi 12-12 battery of a young man and battery, rape and murder of a young woman, women's groups fought long and hard to have the law amended to include marital rape as a criminal offence. They were not successful. So out of all that, what is peculiar to India and what is not, I cannot say. But I'm just calling out the types of violence that women face. I'm locating it in India, and I am trying to find why, rather than who, or say that some women are more in line for a certain kind of battering than others. I'm not prepared to say that. I really cannot. I can say why, yes, because women are the inferior of the two between male and female. And they've been subordinated, and as I said, they have bought into it. And they see being married as an experience that they can get salvation from. So it's tied up very nicely with religion and with rituals. And it would not exist. Brahmanical patriarchy would not exist if women didn't buy into it, if they didn't collaborate with the system, if they did not, in fact, have the Indian mother-in-law syndrome, where young women going into a household which is not their own is extremely stressful and not a very pleasant experience. So you might become the matriarch of the family. In fact, you long to be the matriarch of the family because as a young woman, you have to be obedient. You'll have no say in anything that happens to you. It is going to happen by the head of the household. He will decide everything. And that is true for in whole or in part. So there's some flexibility some families give to women. Yes, they go to college. Yes, they might have friends of either sex, but nobody, no woman in India is going to be free of the fear of having some incident, either in public or in private.
You mentioned about the law that the women in 2010, they tried to pass about
2012,
and it was rejected. What can we do the Indian society or the world to fight against this injustice? What can we do to actually produce change?
I think you have to define the problem, which is what I'm trying to do. I think you have to have allies who are on the same page as you, and you have to call it out. And then only can you do something about it. We have to be honest about it. We have to be clear about it. I'm not saying Brahmanical patriarchy is the only way of looking at it. It is an alternate paradigm. Because up to now, it is the upper castes who have written the history books of India. It is not those who were marginalized, either by the caste or the class system in India. No. This is an alternate way of looking at, this is trying to create an alternate to the dominant narrative. What I'm saying, whether it's going to be accepted or not accepted, there's a good chance it won't be accepted, because it is not the dominant narrative. That has been based on a totally different way of looking at the caste system. And I'm not buying that. I'm not buying that anymore. I'm coming at this as a feminist, and feminists always ask why. And until I'm satisfied with the why question, no matter how unpopular it might be, you have to call it out. And by calling it out, I think you're halfway to getting a solution. Whether the international community can be engaged in that, I don't think so. They don't understand what caste is, how caste is both secular and religious, what the rituals mean. And by the time you try and understand it, something else will shift. It has to be viewed as an Indian problem and solved with Indian ingenuity.
Are there any groups, association, organization in India who are voicing somewhat similar thing as you?
Very much so. There are lots of non-government organizations. There are groups now who are making widows their bread and butter issue. Widows are a problem in India. They are abandoned, the same as young widows who are also abandoned. There are cities in which widows are there by the thousands, upon thousands.
It's a city for widows?
It's a city for widows.
Why are they there?
Because they're dispossessed. They are either thrown out or they flee the stigma of being a widow. It is unlucky to even look at a widow. It is a taboo to look at a widow. Because they are totally dispossessed.
Because they're not virgin?
No, because they don't have a man to protect them. Their husband is dead.
Can't they find a job?
They might be able to find a job, but then they have to find somewhere to live, because they might be, some of them are in abusive situations in the home of the husband, but some do. Now middle-class women can go out, rent apartments, take their children with them if they can. But divorce doesn't happen very often. It's not a societal need at the moment. But it's not that easy just to say that family is everything. You do everything within the family in India. And if you don't have that, and if you're out of that, then the options are quite few.